You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
Remembrances like a polluted beach, a graveyard of mermaid dreams, swept up by the fire I used to preach. Cassandra Mark II, the scapegoat for your ego. They wouldn't listen to the truth of that traitor incognito. Coming out of a cold, fast darkness, moving in, creeping closer now. Once adrift on a rotting carcass, sorcery, a deed most foul. Ariel is his eyes and ears. Watch out, he can take you down.
Welcome to the Christmas edition of the Stone Tapes. Christmas 2016, and that was Lindsay Gold with Prospero, or rather the temptation of I'll get it. Right. The resurrection of Prospero. I should know that by now.
Have you been on the eggnog?
I've not even filmed the eggnog. Well, you guys have been eating eggnog cake rolls, and I haven't had mine yet. Well, I'm very excited for us to all be here again, 2016. Mm. The year's gone very, very fast. And I've got with me Patricia H. Ash.
Hello.
David J. Howe.
Watch her.
We've got Robin Pierce on the phone.
Hi.
Hi, Robin. And we've got back in the studio, much missed, George Mann.
Hello, everyone.
And, of course, our producer, Alex. But he's not allowed to talk, so he can't say hello.
He's eating the eggnog cake roll.
So, as it's Christmas, we thought it'd be very nice to have a look at some Christmas-themed films. And to start us off, we're going to go completely to talk to Robin about something else.
Something else far more important we need to talk to Robin about rather than a Christmas film.
Just to be random. Robin.
Well, actually, this is my Christmas present come early. Anytime there's a new Star Wars film on in the cinema, I am going to be there.
Well, that's why it's appropriate, because it is your Christmas present, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
So tell us, Robin. Tell us about the film, or what you know of it so far.
Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Give you a little bit of background. When George Lucas sold Lucasfilm to Disney for an amazing $4 billion, the decision was taken to release one new Star Wars film every year.
Wow.
Now,
quite a challenge.
This includes completing the 9-part saga that George Lucas started back in 1977. We had episode 7 last year, The Force Awakens. We've got episode 8 next year, which is as yet untitled. But the deal also included standalone movies. Now, standalones within the universe and continuity kind of thing of Star Wars, but they're not part of the 9-part saga. So they can explore the early lives of people like Han Solo if they want, or they can be somewhere as a background to what we've already seen. And this is where Rogue One comes in. It's the first standalone. It's directed by Gareth Edwards, who directed the fabulous independent flick Monsters and the new Godzilla movie of a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set just before Episode 4, the original Star Wars. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So it's something of a prequel in its own way, though.
It's kind of a prequel, actually. To explain what it is, right? Pencils at the ready, guys.
It's a quiz later.
It is. Are you ready?
Yes.
It's a sequel to the prequels of the sequel of the prequels that are the originals, in which this is a prequel of, but not a sequel to the sequel of the originals.
My head's hurting. Is that allowed?
No, I think I understood that.
Oh, my word.
I'm not very mathematical, I might just add there, Robin, so that one will take me a while to work out, I think.
Oh, Mr. Robin, my head is hurting.
Is that David 3PO?
That's David 3PO, Dave 3PO, yes.
Anyway, this film concerns the mission to acquire information on the Empire's ultimate weapon of mass destruction, the Death Star. So, we've got Felicity Jones, who's fast becoming one of my favourite actresses since The Theory of Everything. She plays Jyn Erso, the daughter of the architect of the Death Star.
Oh, I like okay. that.
Ooh.
And she's a criminal, she's on the run. It's got a kind of Dirty Dozen Suicide Squad vibe about it. Anyway, going back to her father, he was coerced and tortured by the Empire to build their ultimate weapon. But he supplied it with a fatal flaw, an Achilles heel that leaves the whole thing vulnerable. And of course, we know in Star Wars what that was.
Mm. The exhaust port was on purpose. Oh my goodness!
The ability to fly X-Wing fighters inside it.
It actually explains why they built this whole big thing with it could destroy a planet. But if you hit this one vent, the whole thing basically goes to pieces.
It's a bit like Vauxhall, then.
Vauxhall, yeah. The Vauxhall Death Star.
Yeah. Other cars are available.
So the film plays out as the mission to get this information to the rebels so that it can be dealt with in the following story, which will be Star Wars A New Hope, which we all saw in 1977. So that's as far as we can go on the plot.
Wow.
I don't want to go any further than that.
So when are you seeing this, Robin?
Tonight, midnight.
This very day.
Oh, you're so lucky.
Good Lord.
Because it's not officially released, is it?
2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I've got tickets for Sunday afternoon.
You've got Sunday afternoon, have you?
Brilliant.
That's George, yeah. So let's go through the obvious here, Robin. So does it have, like, Darth Vader in?
It has Darth Vader in. Darth Vader this time is played by Spencer Wilding,
Fantastic. A
Hill-based kickboxer who is probably known to you, David.
We know him by Weekender,
yes. But as the Martian Ice Warrior from Doctor Who episode.
Skaldic, yes. Yes, absolutely. So does it have Princess Leia and Luke and Chewie?
Here's the cool thing, right? They have Peter Cushing in it.
Really?
The late, great Peter Cushing reprising his role as Grand Moff Tarkin. And as I understand, they haven't gone and used unused footage.
Right.
They've actually resurrected Peter Cushing by means of computer graphics.
Wow.
And the Hollywood Reporter say it's absolutely flawless CGI.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Oh, I just want to go and see it now for that.
I know, that's amazing.
I really do.
Wow.
Well, early reviews indicate that the film is not only good, but Kevin Smith tells us it's Empire Strikes Back good.
Oh, God.
With similar thumbs up coming from Harry Knowles at AintItCoolNews.com,
yeah.
The Hollywood Reporter, and Rotten Tomatoes. So, you know, it's easy to see that this is going to be the must-see film of holiday season.
You can't even get your words out. You're so excited, Robin.
You know, ticket sales alone for the opening weekend have topped 300 million worldwide.
I think that's on my list now. I want to see that now. You've really sold it to me.
So if they just charged $1 for each ticket, they'd have $300 million. But they don't just charge $1 for each ticket.
My tickets for Sunday are 42 quid.
42? Is that for the four of you? Oh, my goodness.
Do you guys want to know what I'm going to do on Friday?
What are you doing on Friday, Robin?
I'm going to go and see it again.
Of course, what else would you do? The first time you have to see it again.
Absolutely. Something may have happened that, you know, while I was blinking or something.
Okay, well. Robin, that song was your choice. Do tell us, what's it called and why did you pick it?
Baby, Please Come Home. Phil Spector production, sung by Darlene Love, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
And I've just loved it since, I think, 1985, when it was the title song to The Gremlins, one of my favourite Christmas movies.
Yes, which leads us into talking about Christmas movies in general. What is it about Gremlins that you like so much?
Everybody talks about Gremlins.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Why do you love Gremlins so much?
Do you not love Gremlins?
I'm not a big fan, no.
What? No. I love Gremlins. I love the little monsters and the juxtaposition of that that post-apocalyptic chaos against all the Christmas decorations.
I remember when Gremlins actually came out, and you couldn't find Gremlin toys in the shops because they'd sold them all. You know, they were all completely sold out.
Well, I had to send my nana to London to find one, and I got one. She came back with one from Harrods. That's the only place.
What was the little cutie gremlin called though?
Gizmo.
That was it.
So Robin, what is it about Gremlins you love so much?
Well, I love it because it's at its heart a traditional Christmas film. Christmas wins out in the end, but throughout the film, it's so anarchic. I love it.
Wow.
I remember it, and I have to say that I'm looking forward to seeing it again soon. I'm hoping that Christmas this year, Santa's going to put a copy of that in my stocking. And hint, hint. And because I loved it as well. And Gremlins 2, for all of its flaws.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we were discussing just before the show about there's a lot of, obviously, surprise, surprise, Santa-related stuff at this time of year.
There is.
And I posed the question, is there a film with a zombie Santa?
Yes, there is.
Oh, God.
Tell us about it.
I knew you'd know, Robin.
Tell us, Robin.
It's a low-budget film called Silent Night, Zombie Night.
Ah.
It's kind of The Walking Dead at Christmas.
That sounds
like
a must-see.
Written and directed by Sean Kane. Oh. And it has a really gross zombie Father Christmas in a grotto in it.
Brilliant.
Wow. Because there's been so many. Again,
has to been done.
Part of the research for the show, I kind of went on various sites and found top 10s, top 20s, top 30s. It's quite surprising, actually, how many horror films there are that have got a Christmas theme to them.
George, what's your favourite Christmas film? Have you got one?
Christmas films, yes, but horror films, probably not so much.
What's your favourite Christmas one, then? You have a guilty pleasure?
Yeah, Arthur Christmas, actually. Fairly recent animated thing, which has just become a family tradition that every Christmas Eve we sit down with the kids and we watch it.
So sweet. David and I's Christmas tradition is a little bit more bizarre than that.
It is a little bit more bizarre.
Go on, David, tell us what.
Well, about 3-4 years ago, I think it was someone on the internet mentioned this Christmas film. And it's so fascinating that we tracked it down and got hold of a copy. And it's called Rare Exports.
And it has got some very creepy Santa Christmases in it.
Yeah, it's actually a Norwegian film with English subtitles. So it's very surreal. It's basically about a young lad who lives with his dad. His mum's not around. And he believes in Father Christmas. And it looks like Father Christmas is coming back because a bunch of archaeologists have discovered what they think is Father Christmas buried underneath a local mountain. They're excavating Father Christmas out of this local mountain. But then they catch what appears to be Father Christmas in like a trap out in the snows. And it's this kind of old, old man with all beard and wearing a red Santa cloak and stuff who doesn't speak.
He's naked later on.
Yeah,
they're all naked.
And then lots of naked Santa Claus. It's a very, very good film. It's very entertaining. We absolutely love it, and we watch it every Christmas since.
It's entertaining because it's actually a really good story.
It's so unusual.
And it is unusual, but also it is actually, it's bizarre. So it's kind of good, but bizarre and sort of a little bit weird with the naked Santas running around everywhere. That's a bit I don't particularly.
Yeah, but these naked Santas, you see, they're kidnapping all the boys and girls from the local village and taking them away somewhere for some nefarious reason.
Sinister.
And you don't know why. And so as this film progresses, you know, you don't know, have they really found Santa Claus? Are these people Santa Claus? What's happening to the kids? What's going on?
It's subtitled, so be warned. There is a little bit of English in it, but mostly it's subtitled.
It's a tremendous film. It's called Rare Exports, a Christmas Tale. And we absolutely love that one.
What about you, Patricia? What's your favourite?
Well, it's not Christmas until I've seen at least one adaptation of A Christmas Carol.
A Christmas Carol. Yeah. See, now the Doctor Who A Christmas Carol one that they did, was that 2 years ago?
Longer than that, I think.
The Matt Smith episode, where he has to kind of go back in time to the kid and show him what the future might be like. And the one with the opera singer, Catherine Jenkins. I love that.
I think that's the best Doctor Who Christmas special they've done, actually.
I agree. I think it was amazing.
I haven't seen this.
It's really feel good.
This is the one where she's in suspended
animation. It's the one with sharks that float through the fogs. They have fogfish.
I would have remembered that.
Patricia.
I don't know why I haven't seen it.
It's amazing.
So there you go. That's your Christmas carol this year.
There you go.
Well, I'll go find that.
It's called A Christmas Carol. Yes. That's tremendous. But there's so many of these things. People talk about Die Hard, though, don't they? And I don't get Die Hard. It's set at Christmas Eve, apparently.
Yeah, that's the thing.
What about you, Robin? I mean, is there any other outstanding Christmas horror movies that you like?
Well, I have the remake of Krampus here on disc to watch on Christmas Eve. So I haven't seen that one yet. I liked Black Christmas, the original, not so much the remake.
I was going to
mention that was a very atmospheric mood piece.
Yes. And that's a very scary film as well, the original Black Christmas. Actually.
Very unnerving.
Yeah. And I think that the key thing for me, Robin, with that original Black Christmas, is that it predates Halloween and Friday the
13th. Yes, it does. It's 1972, I believe.
72 it is. And it predates all of the slashers and all of that stuff that kind of came about from sort of 78, 79 onwards. But it is the most amazing slasher film.
As it is Christmas, we've asked each of the Stone Tapers to select.
So that's Stone Tapers.
You know, like that. We're Stoned Tapers. Stone Tapers. To offer up a song that they particularly like. George, why have you picked this one? Introduce it, please, and tell us why.
I picked Suspended in Gaffer by Kate Bush. You know, I don't know what it is about this, other than the fact it's completely bonkers. it's like the most bonkers Kate Bush song there is, I think. But it's something about it just really speaks to me. It's from my favourite of her albums, The Dreaming, and I think it's marvellous.
Out in the garden, there's half of the heaven, and we're only bluffing. We're not ones for busting through walls, but they've told us unless we can prove that we're doing it, we can't have it all. He's gonna wangle a way to get out of it. She's an excuse and a witness who'll talk when he's called. But they've told us unless we can prove that we're doing it, we can't have it all. We can't have it all.
George,
tell me about genre Christmases.
Well, really, what I was thinking is kind of we'll roll the conversation a bit further, and because I've developed a bit of a habit over the last few years. I was talking about Arthur Christmas on Christmas Eve, but I extend that through the whole Christmas period, really, from the 1st of December, where I start watching Christmas TV specials. That, you know, favourite ones going all the way back to stuff from the 70s like The Good Life or, you know.
The Good Life.
Yeah, Are You Being Served, things like that.
You're not old enough, George.
I'm an old soul. And also reading Christmas books as well. And it's another thing that I've started to do is I got into reading, you know, I don't know if you know, I collect Sexton Blake stories, kind of pulps from the 1920s, and they always used to do the special Christmas number, which was double length, and it was a Christmas mystery. And it's kind of taking the idea of the Holmes, the Blue Carbuncle story, and then rolling it right out, and kind of a bit like the Christmas Carol. They've got all of the kind of early trappings of Christmas. It's the mystery of Mrs. Bardell's plum pudding, and it's gone missing, and they're all out looking for it, you know. And there's murders and things going on. So these days, I'm kind of always looking for the next Christmas read and things to add to my kind of schedule of stuff to watch at Christmas. So I thought I'd see what you guys.
So is it? It was Dickens, wasn't it? The Christmas Carol, the original,
that was
the
Dickens.
Christmas Carols.
Yeah.
So is that the first one? Is that?
I think that.
Well, is there anything earlier than that? As a.
I think he's really credited as creating the image of Christmas that we have these days with that book. I mean, there'd always been traditions of decorating trees and things in Europe, really.
The pagan whole
But it wasn't. It didn't really hit the Victorians as a fashion until Dickens did The Christmas Carol, and all that stuff about kind of all sitting around together and having the turkey and all the little kind of Christmas routines that we all know now. I think really stem from people latching onto that book and the way Dickens presented it.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what would you say then? You obviously mentioned a couple of things there, the Sexton Blakes and stuff. Is there one that stands out for you as like the epitome of a Christmas story? Is everything done right?
Interesting.
What about you? You think on that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What about you, Patricia or Sam? Have you, or Robin even, have you got any thoughts there?
As literature or as a...
Anything.
Movie. Oh, okay. Whew, a Christmas story with everything done right. Well,
because I suppose right is up for definition.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the thing.
I mean, just Christmas stories in general, like It's a Wonderful Life, is a very good one. That's somewhat of a tradition in my family now, and a Christmas story is a very silly little bit of American cinema, and both of those are very good Christmassy Christmas stories. Mm.
So you need that kind of feel-good factor. So the things that make it right are, what, it's got to be snow, and it's got to feel, be an upbeat ending.
Yeah, it has to have a happy
ending. It has to have a good ending.
To be like a regular Christmas movie, Christmas horror movies, any kind of ending you like.
Yeah, we'll come on to that.
When I was a child, Heidi, actually.
Really?
Was the sort of film that we would want to watch, as well as the film that you just mentioned, that Alex mentioned to us earlier.
Do they ever find her in the film?
Yeah. Yes, they do. She doesn't do Heidi and Seeking. But it was always one of those films. And
that
musicals.
That was a sequel, wasn't it? Heidi and Seeking.
Musicals, The Sound of Music.
Yeah.
That was just always had to watch that. And Bond movies, had to watch those at Christmas.
Well, of course, musicals immediately makes me think Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yes.
That's a musical.
I love that one.
What about you,
Robin? I love A Nightmare Before Christmas, but my guilty pleasure, and I'm going to put this out on the radio, so be kind, is Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
It's about 25 minutes of absolute bliss. It's a very fast run-through of the original story by Dickens, populated entirely by Disney characters, past and present. With Scrooge McDuck playing Scrooge, of course.
And the most adorable Cratchit family.
Yes. Absolutely,
it's Mickey and Minnie and all their
And the voice of the late, great Alan Young.
Wow.
So I love that. I watch that every Christmas.
Wow. And while we're on that theme, the Muppet Christmas Carol used to be good.
Was it? I love that. Michael Caine.
Michael Caine, of course, that was Scrooge in that. I thought he did a really good job.
There's another Muppet Christmas special, and for me, it's not Christmas until I've watched this as well. It's called Muppet Family Christmas.
That's right.
And it's the only one where they brought all of the Muppets together. They had the Fraggles, which for the first time, and they all descend on, I think it's Fuzzy Bear's house. For Christmas.
Fuzzy
Bear! and at the end they all sit together and sing, and there's just this moment where Jim Henson is in the kitchen doing the washing up, and it's just not long before he dies.
As him.
And he looks out and then they're all sat there together and he's drying the plates and he says, I love it when they're happy. And it closes on edges. It's like every year. I'm like, every year.
How to Make a Grown Man Cry.
I know.
That one.
It's not a good Christmas movie until a grown man is crying.
This Absolutely. Is true.
But I don't have a book. I mean, a Christmas book. I don't think
Besides
I've ever
Besides a Christmas
read a
Carol,
book.
I don't know. I don't read. I don't know what it is about.
Maybe you need to write quite a lot.
There's quite a lot of crime books.
We need to write one.
I've been reading one. Last year I read The Mystery in White, which I think was. It was one of those British Library classics that they republished from the 30s, and that's about a group of people who get stranded in the snow on a steam train. Ooh. And the carriage, they all decide, you know, they're going to be stuck for Christmas, so they get off, and they traipse through the snow, trying to find somewhere warm and safe. And they find this big mansion, and they go in, and the fires are lit, and there's a tree, and there's presents under the tree, and there's no one at home. And they decide to stay there and spend the Christmas there.
So is it a bit like and then there were none kind of scenario?
Yeah, it's exactly that. And then someone else turns up, and where have they come from? Were they there all along? And you know, someone gets ill, and and they've in that series, that British crime classic series, they've realised they've hit on something. So they published another one called The Santa Claus Murder, which I'm reading this year, which is from 1936.
Wow.
And that's
I think ghost stories are great for Christmas, actually. Yeah. Maybe that has come from Dickens as well. Now, Patricia, would you like to introduce our next song?
Ah, yes.
And tell us why you picked it.
Well, the next song is from a movie called Silent Night, Deadly Night. It is a Christmas slasher film that's basically how to put a serial killer in a Santa suit. And the song, as far as I know, is called Santa's Watching, the creepiest carol ever. Listen to the lyrics.
I'm looking forward to it.
Santa's watching, Santa's waiting, Christmas Eve is slowly fading. Can you hear him in the night? Close the door, turn out the light.
Santa's watching, Santa's creeping. Now you're nodding, now you're sleeping. Were you good for Mom and Dad? Santa knows if you've been bad.
There might be a treat for you in Santa's bag of toys.
But Christmas won't be fun and games for naughty girls and boys.
Santa's watching, Santa's waiting, everybody's celebrating. Did you do your best this year?
Santa's watching, Santa's creeping. Now you're nodding, now you're sleeping. Were you good for Mom and Dad? Santa knows if you've been bad.
There might be a treat for you in Santa's bag of toys.
But Christmas won't be fun and games for naughty girls and
Santa's watching, Santa's waiting, everybody's celebrating. Did you do your best this year? Too late now.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at @superheroIRL. Thanks so much.
Are you interested in video games? If so, be sure to join me, Jake, on the Cyber Den, your weekly dose of tech and games. Treat yourself to the latest news, interviews, some brilliant music, and much more. After all, it is approved by...
me, Duke Nukem.
Kane from Command and Conquer.
Agent 47.
Colonel Roy Campbell.
And more. So join me, Jake, on the Cyber Den every Wednesday, 10 till 12.
On Siren FM, 107.3.
Hi, this is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
And Silent Night, Deadly Night. Patricia, tell us all about it.
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to see what kind of Christmas horror movies there were on Netflix, because I haven't seen a whole lot of Christmas horror movies, I realized after we decided what the theme for this one was going to be. So I went on Netflix, and I found Silent Night, Deadly Night. It was awesome. It's a really solid slasher movie, and I really like what they did with Santa Claus. So, it was made in 1984, and it, like I said before, it's basically how to make a serial killer in a Santa suit. So there's this kid named Billy.
They're always called Billy.
Yeah. It's like Christmas,
all over again. Christmas is called Billy.
Don't tell Billy. Don't tell Agnes.
Don't tell Billy. Don't tell Agnes.
Sorry.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
Interrupting you.
Sorry. Dear self, never name any child Billy.
That's it.
Right. So this kid named Billy is a little bit, gets a bit traumatized because there's this man in a Santa suit who kills his parents.
Uh-huh. That would affect it. You. That would affect
you. Right in front of him. Yeah. So, he doesn't particularly like Santa Clauses. And then after the demise of his parents, which was bloody and very graphic.
Is that the beginning of the film?
Yeah, that's the beginning of the film.
Right, okay.
So then he gets put in an orphanage with some very strict nuns, who beat him for various things like not sitting on Santa's lap at Christmas.
Okay, we can see some more traumatizing happening here.
So he's got a thing about Santa and about naughtiness.
Nuns.
he also gets beaten. There's a lot of gratuitous things in this movie. A good slasher film should have lots of blood and probably also lots of boobs. There's a lot of boobs in this movie.
There's a lot of mistakes, you mean?
No. Lady bosoms.
Oh, lady bits. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know about that. Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that these strict nuns beat him for is he glimpses a couple through a keyhole, and they're...
Because you would just accidentally glimpse someone through
a
keyhole.
You would.
It happens all the time.
He's a little kid. He hears some funny noises. He goes, "What's going on in that room? What are they doing?" And then is beaten. They're beaten by the nuns because I think they're also orphans or something. Mm. And then he is beaten by the nuns.
So cut to the chase. How scary is the Santa Claus?
Very. So once Billy grows up, he's turned out as well as can be expected, really. For most of the year, he seems like a great guy. There's this one nice nun who gets him a job at a toy store in the stock room, lifting and things and putting things. And he seems to be doing really well there. And then it's Christmas time. And that doesn't go well.
Especially not in a toy store.
See, most of it's okay. But then on Christmas Eve, Santa Claus has like a skiing accident or something, and well, he can't come into work. So they're like, oh, no, we need someone to be Santa. Hey, Billy. Put on the Santa outfit.
Oh, dear me.
You know this is not going to end well.
So it goes kind of okay for the day. But then at the holiday party afterwards, Santa starts drinking.
Oh, dear.
And then he witnesses some co-workers being naughty, his really jerky co-worker, and is making unwelcome advances towards the girl he likes. He snaps. So then he's got this, he just goes around punishing everybody he perceives as being naughty.
Fantastic.
So the jerk co-worker, unfortunately also the girl he likes, his boss, his other boss.
Everyone.
Basically everyone, and then he just wanders around the town seeking out people to kill, basically.
And this is 84, you said?
84.
Because that's kind of almost the height of the sort of the slasher.
Yeah.
Sort of, let's take it on here. There's so many slasher films came out in the 80s.
What do you give that out of 10, Patricia?
8 out of 10.
And
it's a good movie. It's well written. It's interesting. It's not quite funny, but it's not taking itself too seriously.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's a great Christmas film, but not appropriate for children.
David, would you like to introduce us to the next song, please?
So my track, I was thinking we've got lots of Christmas music here. We've got lots of kind of carols. We've got some awesome Kate Bush. And I thought, given that it's Christmas, the one thing that we really, really want to do is party hard.
When it's time to party, we will party hard.
And before we move on to David's film of the month, Robin.
Yes?
Have you seen Silent Night, Deadly Night? Because I'd like to hear from you, being a connoisseur of these movies.
Connoisseur.
You're a connoisseur.
I haven't. But I was making, while Patricia was talking about it, I was making a note that I need to see it.
I think you all do. I need to see it.
Highly recommend.
It sounds like one that we would definitely like, especially with lots of wine inside you, by the sound of it. So, David, your film of the month this month is?
Film of the month this month, yes, indeed. It's a sort of a Christmas film, in a way. We've gone for Tales from the Crypt, which is a 1972 British horror film, directed by Freddie Francis and released by Amicus, I think I'm right in saying. It's one of those great films that's made up of kind of five different segments. So you get these little anthologies and stuff with different stories happening. Tales from the Crypt has got a very loose kind of, joining piece, which is sort of five people are wandering through some crypts for no readily apparent reason.
they don't know why they're there either.
They don't know why they're there. They're in some caves, and they go into a cave, and there's sort of Ralph Richardson there in a monk's hood and stuff. And it's all very, very surreal, and he starts to sort of say, why do you think you're here? And then it goes, boop, 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 and you get a kind of stories coming through. So... the first story, I should say as well, all these stories came from EC Comics' Tales from the Crypt magazine. Or in fact, most of them did. Some of them actually didn't. But they're all of that ilk. And those of a certain age will remember these tremendous comic stories of skeletons and people with bits falling off. And great stories from way back. So the first one is Joan Collins. She kills her husband on Christmas Eve, which is why this is a great Christmas film. And as she prepares to hide his body, so she hears on the radio that this nutter has escaped from a local lunatic asylum and has nicked a Santa costume and is in the area. In fact, he's right outside her house trying to get in. It's a lovely little piece. One thing that we said when we watched it, though, Sam and I, was, well, why on earth... Because she continues to try and hide his body in the cellar and mop up blood and everything. Why not just leave him there and say this nutter killed him? Her problems have gone away.
I'd ring the police. That's exactly what I would do.
It's got a lovely little cameo from Joan Collins' character's daughter, played by Chloe Franks, who I think was actually in another one of these films as Christopher Lee's daughter in a different film.
Oh, right.
She ends up letting Santa into the house because she thinks he's the real Santa, and she's come, I've let him in. And it's, of course, it doesn't end well. Then we move into the second segment, which is Ian Hendry in a piece with his girlfriend, and they seem to be involved in a car accident, and he wakes up in the car, and it's all kind of horrible, but he seems to have gone forward in time, maybe 2 years or something, and time travel thing, and he died in the crash and all this kind of thing. That's quite groovy. excuse me. The third segment is, I think, for me, probably the strongest one. This is the one with Peter Cushing, playing an old man who loves all the kids and loves the animals, but he's got some nosy neighbours and a son who decide to basically have it in for poor Peter Cushing, and they get his dogs all taken away from him, and his kids won't go and see him anymore, and he gets sad. Poor old Arthur Grimsdyke gets sadder and sadder and sadder until he actually dies. And in fact, he kills himself. It's very sad. But a year later, guess who comes back from the dead? And it's a tremendous piece of makeup from Roy Ashton on this of Peter Cushing as like this undead corpse.
He makes a great zombie.
He's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Great bone structure, that
husband. I love that one. The fourth one is, this is to do with a little figurine, the Chinese figurine. This one's actually based on the monkey's paw, and I'm sure you guys and our listener all know about the story of the monkey's paw, where you have like three wishes, but of course the reason it never works is because they're taken quite literally in terms of the what you wish for, and it's never quite what you wanted. So you do the one wish, you do the second wish to try and undo the first wish, and then you do the third wish to try and undo the first two, and then realise that you've got it all wrong all the way along anyway, and you're in a far better, far worse position than when you started. So that's quite fun. That's got Richard Green, Barbara Murray and Roy Dotrice in. Yeah. The last segment is probably the most horrific of them, I think. This is It's a Home for the Blind, where Patrick McGee is playing one of the blind guys in this Home for the Blind. And a new guy comes in to run the home, who is like, he's very vicious about all of this and doesn't make life good for people. And he owns this dog that barks to all the blind people. And so basically the blind people all decide to sort of take their revenge on this guy. They lock him and his dog in separate rooms in the basement. There's lots of hammering and sawing and knocking noises and stuff coming from outside. Eventually they open his door and he discovers that he's got these little tiny corridors that he has to go down, and then he realizes that one of the corridors is lined with razor blades, and he has to go down this corridor lined with razor blades. Then they open the door for his dog, which has been starved. His only way out is to retreat back down the corridor with razor blades, and they turn the lights out.
Oh, my God.
It's really horrific, that last story. So this is Tales from the Crypt. As I said, it's got a tremendous cast. There's some very, very good performances in it. I think it's great little stories. They've all got a really neat twist on them. Did you manage to see it, Patricia?
I did. I really liked it.
Yeah, Sam?
I loved it. I think it's great. I think it's got some really good stories. What about you, Robin?
Well, I love all these anthology movies. For me, the standout piece in this was Peter Cushing.
Yes.
The most effective performance he ever gave. The lady, his wife's photograph, that was his wife in real life who had died the previous year.
Yes, David was telling me that. Yeah. I thought it was really sad.
So sad.
It's a tremendous performance from him, though, isn't it?
It was.
Probably one of his best performances, I think.
And what about you, George?
Unfortunately, I haven't seen this for a long time. I did watch it originally. Well, I say originally, not 1972, but I have seen it. But I love all these anthology movies, that Amicus stuff. I wish actually someone was still doing stuff like this now, because it's the texture of it. I love how you can sit down and you get this series of different stories, just like David was saying. You get a horrific one at the end, but then you've got a more thoughtful one.
This is actually a very good mix of like really horrific, thoughtful. Sort of revenge stories, and generally speaking, the nasty guys get their comeuppance, which is kind of what you want, really, in a good upbeat Christmas film.
Quick round of giving it a score, then.
Oh, it's a 9 out of 10 for me. I loved it.
7 out of 10.
George, on memory.
On memory, I'd say 8 out of 10.
Robin,
I will go with 9.
Now, I think I would go with a 9 as well. And that's all we've got time for. Thanks so much to David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, Robin Pierce, George Mann, and especially to our producer, Alex Lefchuk. Until next time.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, everyone.